Welcome, Progressive Radio Network listeners, green future growers, and anyone who's new to the show. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing. Did you get your copy of the 2018 Spring Garden Journal? It's now live on Amazon for only $8.95. Since I took out January and February, it really dropped the price. It's a great place to record your garden journey, keep all your data in one place. You're going to want to remember frost dates, planting dates, seed varieties, harvest dates. And just so many of my guests have said that keeping good records have helped them be the most productive gardeners they can be. Mike and I created this journal to keep track of what you're growing, what you're eating, what you're harvesting, and just all those things together. So get your 2018 Spring Garden Journal today.
Recording system that I've been using since January. And like my old recording system, you saw the sound waves, you know, it was like this big file. Now I just have this itty bitty teeny tiny button in the corner of my computer, and I could see myself forgetting completely. I forgot what I was saying. Something about working hard in my students.
Yes. Tell them to keep working hard.
Yeah, or start working hard to begin with. Like, we're go today's quarter parent teacher conferences, and no, they've worked. I mean, the school today is nothing like school when we all were kids, and just the I mean, I'm in a district that's like one of the top. You know, they really strive for excellence and high standards and big accountability, and they push the kids like nothing I've ever seen. So the kids kind of, you know, resist a bit, but they work hard.
Yes.
But I definitely am always on their cases about, if you want to do everything you want to do in life, you got to work hard. And then it'll come true, because I've been pretty lucky. I kicked my bucket list in 2016. I just turned 50 and I'm like, all right, I'm good.
So, perfect.
Yeah. Okay, so I always like to tell my guests at the beginning, because it is recorded, it's really easy to edit. Like, if you want to change an answer, think about something, or let the cat out, or get a cup of coffee, or, you know, anything. Don't hesitate to put me on hold or come back to a question or anything. And then, do you have any questions for me?
No, I don't think so. I think we're fine. I don't know that I read through the questionnaire as well as I should have been. I've been kind of busy, but I think we'll be fine.
No worries. I just send that to people so that, like, while we're talking, they kind of can see what's coming next, or they kind of have an idea, or we don't even have to answer these questions at all. Like, your episode 236 or interview 236, but I still get a little nervous when I get off my script. And even though my listeners are always like, stop interrupting your guests and stop going off on tangents and be quiet and let your guests talk more, I don't know. I still, like, I just try to tie it into, like, what my husband's doing in our garden or things that I think are relevant. But
okay.
Anyway, if you're good, we'll just start.
Yeah, let's get started. Cool. Yeah, perfect. You're up bright and early. I'm up reasonable, and so let's do it.
Yeah. Okay. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. Today it is Tuesday, April 3rd, 2018, when we're recording, and I have an awesome guest on the line that I know you're just gonna love. So welcome to the show, Bill Sadler.
Yes, great to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you. And you're, I guess I should have asked these questions more, at least. You're a soil scientist, right?
Well, I'm a biochemist who fell in love with sustainability at all levels on the planet. So I have done a fair amount in soils. I've done a fair amount on endangered animals, environmental projects, and things like that. So I've done it predominantly from the business world, because my belief always was that until the boardrooms talk about sustainability, it was going to be hard to happen, at least in our economic system. And I am very pleased to announce that I think a lot of boards today are talking about sustainability and green and what it takes. So I'm kind of happy that that is all, you know, kind of grown up to be that. So that's what I do.
Well, my listeners are going to love this because I call my listeners green future growers because they're forward thinking, they're entrepreneurial, they're visionaries, they believe in a green environment. You know, they're like, it's not just about gardening as much as it is like there's just this kind of bond between all of us about really caring about our planet. And I love that because for some reason in my life, I don't know why, I'm like addicted to business podcasts. Like when I went to school for college back in 1988, I think, or 1986, when I first graduated high school, my first year in college, like you could not get me to go into the business building. Like I would have resisted with every, I wouldn't have taken a business class. I would have been like, I was an art major. I was like, no, which is totally wrong. I should have taken them then. And I should believe, and like now, I don't know why I'm totally addicted to them, but it's true what you're saying. Like it has to be in the boardrooms. And then there's this funny movie called The Beautician. What is it? Beauty and the Businessman or something. I don't know. It's like Hillary Duff, and she falls in love with this guy. She ends up like getting this job working for this guy. And he's not really a tree hugger, but he is totally into efficiency and saving money. And so he's really green and chooses all these green practices for his business because it's economically and efficient. So I think you're going to teach us some of those things today. And I'm an efficiency, like I just can't stand any kind of waste anywhere, whether it's my time or the garbage or anything. So as I said, I'll be quiet now and let you talk. Tell us a little bit. Well, I guess that's kind of telling us a little bit about yourself. I always do kind of like ask the show about your very first gardening experience. Like, were you a kid? Were you an adult? Who were you with? Like, what did you grow? Like, what was your very first gardening experience?
Well, that's kind of an easy one for me. I had a father who was probably a bit ahead of his time in the green side. I wouldn't say he was a hippie or anything like that, quite opposite, but he just liked farming and liked the earth and was very smart about understanding what weeds did and all kinds of stuff. So about the age of, and I, you know, I'm trying to remember childhood, about 7 or 8, we had a big garden and I was pretty involved in that. And he came up with a little idea that I should sell, and my brother preceded me, and he's a bit older, of selling vegetables on a road that had a little bit of traffic, and this is now in the 1950s. So we did a farm to market garden stand back in the, I'll say before anybody kind of knew what those were. And I had about 350 to 400 tomato plants I took care of and picked, and peppers and corn and asparagus and everything, and sold the excess on a little roadside stand. And my father thought that, I think, was a, and I have to give him full credit. He's not with us any longer, but full credit for a bit of a understanding what's good on the earth and what was kind of a beginning role to be a businessman, I guess, or to be involved in some attribute of entrepreneurship. So I did that for about 5 or 6 years. And other than a few years that I went away to college, I have had a garden just basically every year of my life. I'm sure there's some in there I haven't, graduate school, this or that, but between my family's garden or our own, I have been a gardener for a long, long time. And now there has been a bit of a real epiphany in our, I guess that's the right word I should use, in our family, because my daughter, who lives down the hill from us on a farm, is now the head of our family garden. No longer my role. I am the assistant, and I couldn't be more thrilled that she has now taken up the effort and the staff, so to speak, or whatever, to run our garden.
There's
a, we have a 200 plus acre farm that my father bought years ago that is now in our family. But the garden is hardly that. I mean, it's a very nice, it would be viewed a large garden in most households. I think it's pretty productive. We raise grapes and a number of other things. But the big point is to me is that we're now moved another generation, and looks like her two sons are engaging in the garden as well. So all exciting in our world for how long we've been in the garden industry. So.
Aww, that's awesome. So do you want to tell us about like the environmental projects or like the endangered animals or?
Yeah, I would love to. What?
Being a chemist and fall in love with sustainability. Like.
Yeah. And a guy told me something that I scoffed at when I heard it. And now I have come to believe it. And the gentleman's comment was, is you will gain your passion for natural and organics as you execute it or do it, not at the front end. Once you see it work and see the results, you'll get more excited about it. And I will tell people in my world that that's certainly been true for me. So what it all, I don't know when it kind of started, but in the sense that I always had an interest in this, and an opportunity arose to develop a zoological line. And of course that moves you into a lot of discussions on environment and habitat and all the ins and outs of what, you know, ecosystems are all about. So that was very, very rewarding. It was very business successful. So made a lot of friends. But as I began to study the rest of the planet, you know, it all kind of starts with plants. The animals are for the most part, dependent on the plants, and the plants are obviously dependent on the sun and all the very classic ecosystem kind of discussions on a macro and micro basis. But what I began to appreciate was that Mother Nature, in her very good wisdom, had developed nutritional systems for plants that were actually more similar to what animals had done. So all these years of being involved in animal research and animal began to look true for plants as well. Obviously, we deliver them a little different, but the ecosystems in the soil, so got to know about Elaine Ingemann's work and the soil food web, and all that began to happen, I began to look at what we put on the ground from a, quote, a fertilizer or a nutritional plane, and all of a sudden I understood that Mother Nature's systems were kind of more related than they were different. I'd always seen chemical fertilizers, which to me were always very foreign to what an animal would eat. No animal eats a refined, you know, a static diet other than a very few set of animals in, you know, laboratory environment. You know, everybody's built around natural and what Mother Nature produces. And so I began to study that and found a lot of comparisons. So it just opened up a whole door to bring that technology or that information to people. So began with building fertilizers and looking at natural solutions to problems, both personally doing them as well as building products and business relationships for them. Well, that's kind of how it got started.
So how do you build business relationships for things like that?
Well, what I've been fortunate to do in my career, I've worked for a number of companies, and now particularly one with our Garden Maker website that helps customers build their own. So we began looking at ways and reaching out to people. So there are customers that I work with that have larger branded names that most people would be familiar with, and yet smaller companies. That are trying to reach out and find more sustainable approaches. So we've tried to come up with some business approaches to reach them and build products for them. I find it kind of a grassroots movement still. I think there's a lot of large companies who want to participate and some are growing, but it's still there's still a lot of road to travel, I'll say, to get everybody on board to that end. So. It's been kind of fun to help people do it. But our new website, I think, is a key part of what we've been able to do to help people access. Since that maybe that's the good word. It was hard to find and access the stuff you kind of needed. And so one of the things we built was a way for people to get it fairly easily.
And that's
I tell one brief story.
.com, right?
Correct. And I why that all got started is I have this small farm and I wanted to buy 100 pounds or 200 pounds of something for my garden or a pasture or a small piece of yard or what, and I couldn't get them. It was hard. And, I mean, I could buy a semi-load, you know, if I wanted a semi-load, but that's a little, 40,000, 44,000 pounds is a lot. So,
Wait, did I miss something? You're talking about buying 1,000 pounds of dirt, 100 pounds of dirt?
No, fertilizers, which would be things like alfalfa meals or blood meals or feather meal or mineral sources or whatever. And you can kind of find them in little small 5-pound bags, but if you wanted 100 pounds, they were hard to find. I couldn't find them around where I lived, and I couldn't find them around other people. So what we began to do in our website is to find a way that people could access all the individual ingredients that they may want, because I'm a big believer that if you're going to feed yourself what you're growing, then you ought to know what you're putting on the ground. I mean, why is that supposed to be a secret? I mean, you can argue that all these are proprietary, but no. I mean, people need to know and want to know what they're feeding and what they're putting on their soil and what their family's going to consume. So I just wanted to make it, and not only I, a whole team of people, wanted to make that both transparent so they could see the full formulas and that they could access these in amounts that were not, you know, like literally buying a semi-truck of stuff. You could actually buy them in 10 and 5 and 25-pound amounts. And that's what we did. So I was very excited about that because I think it lets people now have access and have the freedom and the willingness, or the freedom to do as they would like to do for their family.
Cool. Well, I'm trying not to say I love all this, but I really do. One thing, Mike, my husband, so my husband's really the gardener at our house because I almost always have a full-time job or some technology project or something I'm working on. I like to paint in the garden and I like to eat the vegetables. I like to grow flowers. I mean, there's some things I like to grow, but for the most part, like he has this thing I call the mini farm. And like we're like frantically right now trying to find a good source of affordable, we're just basically looking for dirt at this point. But it is very hard to find these things. So like, when did you start this? But how long have you been doing it?
About a year. I mean, just for all intents and purposes. And the first year's attempt was pretty much to be somewhat quiet about it. Don't take that we weren't out looking for customers, but we knew that in any launch of a technology of this type, there would always be a few wrinkles and bugs and things you kind of had to sort out, even though we had beta tested it and, you know, we did all the things you're supposed to do. We just learned, and there were. So for all that last summer, we were working on kind of, I guess, tweaking. I wouldn't say fixing. I mean, it wasn't like there were major breaks, but you know, some freight rates were not as good as they were supposed to be, and that threw customers off and all of that, weight sizes and that. So we just adjusted it. And so this is really for us, the real launch kind of began in January or December. So this is relatively new to customers and a new opportunity for them to go online or go to the internet, which of course people are doing on a much more frequent basis now, and not only be able to buy with full transparency of what your formula is, if you choose one of ours, which you're allowed, certainly feel free to do. But the big thing is you can customize your own, or you can buy all the individual ingredients and bring them home and mix it up in yourself. And that's what we wanted to do.
So do you want to talk?
Because nobody was doing that.
No. Do you want to talk a little bit about like soil testing and stuff? Because that's definitely been recommended on my show a lot, but Mike, I got to say, hasn't really done it. Last year, he finally said, go ahead and get it done. And then I never sent the sample in. But do you want to talk about that a little?
Sure, I'm happy to. The soil testing is, first of all, a very valuable tool. But it shouldn't be overused. And the next thing that you kind of learn is where to send things is kind of important. Because and please know, if anyone's listening from a university, this is no slam, please. But universities, extension services, places that you might find very convenient in your community, have a tendency to make their recommendations based on traditional chemical NPK kind of comments and lime for pH and all that. we look at it very different through a guy, science, who was done at the University of Missouri. That's kind of coincidental since I'm here, named Albrecht. And what he was looking is how to bring back the soil to life in both the chemistry and the biology. So the part that we spend the most time thinking through is how to feed the biology that lives in the soil. And this is a bacterial, fungal, insect, you know, about every different type of critter you can think of that lives in the soil, and how does that whole ecosystem work. So what we tend to think of soil tests is do them like, if you, my view is every other year, every third year, that's all I kind of do them, because they don't change overnight. And then kind of monitor what you need to do. But there's also a model in our world that if you feed the soil and bring the biology back to correct, I'll say balance, you will be amazed how fast the soil chemistries begin to also align themselves. And so what we tend to think through is, if you provide a food source, which are these kind of ingredients I've mentioned, in a fertilizer, and think about it that way, a lot of the soil chemistry issues begin to, it's not wane, and so I'm sure there's a soil chemist rolling it out there right now, but certainly it begins to put things back in balance. And I've seen it, not only, I've watched it happen, and I know it will begin to do that for other people as well. So I like soil tests. They give you a guidance. Now I'm gonna plug somebody. I guess that's what I'm doing. We'll sort of comment. We like a laboratory called Logan Labs in Ohio, because they provide most of the analysis back to customers on a organic basis. So they'll help you look at your numbers, and if you can solve those organically, they help you do that. And I think if that's the direction you want to go, then to me, that's very, very helpful, because sometimes the soil reports are kind of confusing about what to add and what to do and things like that. So
I love this, because people ask me, oh, that's a question I get a lot. Where do you send your soil test to? So Logan Labs, I'll find the, and I'll put the
link. Yeah, LoganLabsLLC.com or something like that. I'm bad about having the website remembered, but yeah, it's a quick Google. I hear there's a little search engine out there that people sometimes use called Google that can help you find it. So
my husband likes me to use the search engine called Ecosia, because they plant trees to
okay.
For every search you do.
Oh, cool. Okay.
I don't know. I use them. Sometimes
no, that's
I
a good one.
Having to go to Google, because they just sometimes, whatever this place is, doesn't. Ecosia doesn't always have the solution I'm looking for, but
yeah.
9 out of 10 times it works for me. So, and actually I think the biggest yeah. reason I go to Google is because I have to get on my drive, which is completely a separate thing. But
yeah, right.
LLC comes right up in Ecosia, soil testing services. So awesome. That is wonderful. Cause that's definitely a question my listeners have asked me a lot, or people at seed fairs, or just people.
Yeah. I think they just do a nice job of helping you to understand your soil from more of a, what's called an Albrecht system or a Neil-Kinsey system of what to apply and what you need to apply. And then, as I said, we have a site that kind of helps you build what you want. Obviously, if you're a farmer and you need lots of stuff, that's a little different deal. But if you're, you know, need between 5 and 100 pounds of material, which is a fair amount, then our site kind of helps you kind of get that going. We do not make recommendations on it, because that's a very complex kind of a deal. But the Logan site will give you direction of where to go. The other thing about organic fertilizers for your listeners, in my mind, is they're incredibly forgiving. You can add too much and you can do some things, but it really is on the excessive side, where the traditional chemical approach is a much more, I'll say, intense, or you need to be much more careful about what you do. So on organics, you can apply a little bit wrong, because a lot about what we're trying to apply to the soil is food. And I'm going to use the term in human side, calories. Gardeners will talk sometimes about putting energy in the soil or putting carbon in the soil. That is really about discussing the amount of energy. So what we're trying to do is the plants, the way Mother Nature designed it is plants exude sugars into the soil from what they make on top from sunlight, and that attracts the microbes in the soil. The problem is if the plants are not particularly healthy, they don't have all the minerals they need to be healthy, then they don't produce as much sugars. So what our fertilizers are doing is it's helping feed directly those microbes so they become more populated. They then assimilate to the root structure more rapidly, and that then helps the plant transfer minerals, which then they become more robust. Now, once they're more robust, they can feed the microbes themselves. So think about maybe a young animal that can't care for itself. It needs nurturing and caring, and then over time, it can certainly become capable of dealing with itself. So that's what we're trying to do with our food and fertilizers, is to make the soil healthier, makes the plants healthier, and then vice versa, the plants then return the favor, and then the whole cycle begins. And that's how you grow prairies as high as a man on a horse before, I'll say, chemical intervention. That's how you do that. And that's how Mother Nature, or how the whole ecosystem, was derived around. So that's what we help people build those, or we let you build as you see fit, or ones that grandpa or dad used to say, you know, I used to always do great with blood meal and a little feather meal and a little bit of this trace mineral azomite and a little calcium and all that. And that's what I mixed together, and why I put eggshells in my garden and all that all now begins to make sense, because that's what you're basically doing.
Cool. I think people are going to be so fascinated by all this. So we're talking April 2nd. Like, is there a certain time? Like, because I felt this fall, I was like, why aren't we doing the soil test now? Why wait till spring? But is there a reason why you do it in the spring, or does it matter?
On the soil testing?
Yeah.
No, it does not matter. You could take it any time. The tradition is what you might find if you're really going to get into it. What we do here, and we have a small production vineyard, we do petiole samples every year, which is basically looking at what's in the plant. And then we do soil tests every other year or every third year. And that's to keep more of an understanding. So actually, in my mind, sending in, if you want to spend the money, this is an economic decision, but if you're really concerned, sending in samples to laboratory for analysis of what the plant has in it may be actually more valuable than worrying about the soil immediately as well, because the soils don't move quite as fast, but you can do them anytime you want. The comment I'm trying to get to, and I'm sorry for the long answer, if you're doing petioles and you're trying to compare year over year, you want to kind of take them at a similar time. So if you take them in June, then you ought to try to take them in June all the time if you're trying to compare year over year. On soils, I don't think it matters near as much, but there's certainly nothing wrong with kind of taking them on a kind of an historical, you know, take them in the summer, take them in the fall kind of a deal, just to make sure that you're getting them kind of in the same kind of format or whatever. But to my knowledge, I don't know of any reason you could take them anytime you want, other than the ground might be frozen and you can't get them, but that's another whole discussion. But anyway, so.
Well, that's what I'm thinking now, like the soil's frozen and as soon as it thaws he's going to be ready to plant, and it wouldn't have been better to have taken it in the fall and kind of know what you should have, but maybe
I think so
things until later.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because soils can be very wet in the spring, they're kind of mushy, and you got to dry the samples to send them into the labs, and you know, and they get compacted a bit if you're compressing them too much. And so, yeah, I think in the summer or the fall is a much better time to take. Plus, I like to, again, on what we learned in our website, gardenmaker.com, was what I encourage people is if you've taken your soil test this summer, fall is a wonderful time to add a lot of the nutrients that you may need to have. Calcium and phosphate sources, depending on what you get, don't break down instantly. So they take time to work in. And there's a cost, a shock value. You don't want to over apply anything. If you're requiring, I'll say, a lot of material, then you want to kind of divvy that up into multiple applications. You don't want to kind of shock the soil with a lot of one particular nutrient. It has some challenges to how to incorporate. So I like divvying those up. So fall is a wonderful time to make a lot of these applications because the soil is going to kind of go dormant then after that. And yet it's going to go dormant from a plant side. It's not going dormant from a biology side. And so lot is going to happen into the soil to get it ready for come next spring. And then you can add additional that into the spring. Remember, this is a culmination effect. This is a slow build of improving your soil to a level that you probably haven't seen in a while. So it took you decades to kind of, and for some people to kind of mess it up, it'll take a few years to probably get it back where you might like it. But I will comment, and I get this all the time. You get questions, I get questions. Organics work slow. I won't see any effect. And the answer to that, in my mind, is wrong. You will see impact with organics in the first week to 10 days you make any application, if done reasonably in some kind of a thought-through process. And it will just grow from there. People argue, oh, I won't see any results for a year or two. No, you will start to see results immediately. The good news is you will get even bigger results in the future years. That's what people don't see, is that things just keep getting better. Things don't keep getting worse.
Can you spell petioles? The test that you
did? Oh. Yeah. Petioles? Yeah, I think it's petiole. P-E-T-I. Let me look that up real quick on my little world. Make sure I am doing it correctly. But no, go ahead, and I will look that up real quick. I want to make sure I'm doing it correct.
And how does somebody do that test? Like, do they mail in a leaf? Or
yeah, like, for example, and I, because I know the
I've never heard of that kind of test.
Yeah, the soil lab in the University of Missouri has a whole petiole analysis that you can just send in, and they'll send you a report back. So I'm guessing a lot of universities, I don't know if Logan offers them or not. I haven't sent one to Logan, but that would be another. So petiole is P-E-T-I-O-L-E. And so it's petiole. It's just a petiole analysis. It's the stem or the green part of a plant. You just want to make sure you get the same consistent deal. On grapes, we take the piece on the leaf. We don't take the leaf, we take the stem, so to speak, that then goes to the cane. That's the petiole. And we collect those and send those in.
Okay. So if people have, like, are there other questions you've gotten about soil testing or like how to, I don't know, when they should put their stuff that they get, their fertilizers that they get, or...
Well, the fertilizers, again, there's people I know who put down a fair amount in the fall and just till it into the soil. And again, remember, we're putting a food down as much as we're putting a fertilizer down. And they might put a cover crop on it, and that would be good, and then till that in the spring. And then we would recommend I'll stay with our signatures. We have tomato formulas. We have rose formulas. We have different formulas. I would apply in the spring. I would apply those in the spring as you're planting, because what we like is they become an immediate food source for all that biology around the plant. And so it's a way to kind of, I guess I could use the word kickstart or give an extra boost to the population, because what we want to happen is we want that biology to begin to associate with what's called the rhizosphere, which is the surface of the roots. And of course, we're looking at mycorrhizal fungi. We're looking at all kinds of different organisms we want to have around when that plant is young and sending out all its root hairs and its root development. And that just gives those, that synergy effect seems to work extremely well. Same with grasses, if you're doing this for a lawn or whatever, making applications in the spring tend to help it grow, because most people, not all, our southern viewers would have warm season grasses like Bermudas and Azolla and things like that. But a lot of people have fescues, bluegrasses and things like that. And those are spring driven grasses. So we want to get as much growth as we can in the time and the temperature that, that fits their deal, which is going to be that 70, 80 degree peak. So that's what we're trying to do in that April, May timeframe. So, so it depends on the, what you're looking at. Flowers and shrubs, I think you can put around flowers and shrubs that are perennials anytime you want. I like a, I do a fall kind of addition, and then I do another addition in the spring just to give it a nice, kind of a nice boost.
So do these things like help things bloom more, or like produce like a bigger turnip, or like what is, well, adding these amendments help your, I don't know, final product?
Yeah. Well, certainly we all know that growing tomatoes is the equivalent of the Olympic event of all gardening. I mean, who has the biggest, who has the best, right? I mean, we all, that's our guide. So yes, what we're attempting to do is frankly not so much worried about bigger and greater as hopefully more nutritious. There is a fair amount of data that USDA has apparently collected that nutrient profile of organically grown vegetables seems to be better, I'll just say. I don't want to get carried away with that, because there are, the data has some ups and downs and some things to it. But for the most part, I think people believe that the plants, the fruit from plants or the vegetables or the green leaves from plants growing organically can have a better nutritional profile for humans. The other thing you get with generally with these kinds of plants is pest management. Again, I scoff at a gentleman in my early years. As I said, the passion comes later. So I have 15 tomato plants, and I ask him, what am I going to do about those hornworms that are going to show up and start chomping around on my leaves? And his answer is, you aren't going to have any. And I said, you're crazy. What do you mean I'm not going to have any? He says, no, the plants are going to be healthier, and they're actually going to produce secondary compounds that are going to keep them away. So in a, let's just go over the last 10 years, we've probably had maybe one to two of those a year, and that's it. And we just pick them off and they're gone. But so the plants, the next thing that you'll find is plants just become more robust. They become healthier. They're producing a lot of secondary compounds that are not in the classic mineral form. So lycopenes in tomatoes and antioxidants in fruits and things like that. So what we tend to believe happens is under organic natural system, you just produce more flavorful, more nutritious, and likely a healthier plant biosystem that you get to take care of. So in flowers, that would probably generate itself in blooms. Fruit trees would obviously be fruit and health and insect management. And certainly in garden annuals, some of the very same responses. Probably the toughest one I've personally dealt with my daughter, is how to deal with things like squash beetles and a few things like that that seem to be not only seem to be almost attracted to the organic products, because they're obviously they're finding better nutrition. And those have been probably the toughest to kind of try to deal with. And we've tried all kinds of things, and I'm not here to tell you I have a magic bullet in any way, because I don't, we don't. We still struggle from time to time with squash beetles. But for the most part, all the other critters have generally been not a major problem.
Well,
so that's what you
also
get.
You know, a lot of people say, because you're bringing in, when you have organic flowers and things, you're bringing in those beneficial insects that will get rid of some of those.
Oh, absolutely. If you've not ever watched, and we won't go through it all here, if you've not watched the video, I think it's on YouTube, about what the ecosystem did when wolves returned to Yellowstone, then you should, if you want to understand how a major single predator can literally impact the willows that grow and the erosion problems that involve around a stream. So all of that is interconnected, though there seems to be a long distance between erosion on a river or on a stream bank to a wolf, but they are. And I think what you just said is absolutely true. The number of predator insects we have in our yard and around our farm now than we used to have is just phenomenal. There's a whole plethora of them. Wheel bugs and assassin beetles and all of that are now pretty prevalent around our house. Who then eat ladybugs, who eat things that we do not desire to be on our plants. So yes, good comment.
That's interesting. We read about that in my fourth grade class in two different places. We read about it in, I can't remember if it was the science book or the social studies book, but we also read about it in reading. So I'm going to revisit that with my students and say, hey, look, I talked to this gentleman this morning and he brought that up too. Anybody remember what the big thing was? And I want to say it had to do with like the elk. When the wolves came back, they kind of cut down on the elk population, and the elk were what were destroying the willows and the trees.
Yes, that was part of it. The other is coyotes. Coyotes had moved in. Coyotes are terrible, are very hard on small rodent insect, or small rodents. And the rodents were ending up burying a lot of the seeds in their homes. So the problem was is that we had a very low ground squirrel population, and they are very important. The beavers were all messed up because the willows were being eaten by the elk because they were overpopulated, and the beaver didn't have anything, and they couldn't then build their lodges. So yes, it's an entire whole system of how all that began to affect. So the coyotes went down. They don't like wolves, and so they kind of scoot out of town, and the wolves kind of manage the elk, and the coyotes go down, and the small rodent population became better in balance, and that encouraged certain plants to grow better, and all of a sudden the willows did better, and the beavers are back. And
because that was it.
It just goes from there.
A little chart about why were the trees shorter before they brought the wolves back, and then how much they grew in the 7 years. During the study. We're getting a little off topic there. Sort of, not really, because it's
well, not really, because it's the same ecosystem in its own way as what we're trying to bring to your, I'll say, your farm or your family or your home, in the sense of trying to build that environment around there. And no, we don't want wolves. This is not, but we might want robins. As nasty as they are, we might end up with a mole or two. We might end up with some funguses on some mulch that we don't like to look at, but tells us that the funguses are coming back into the soil. So there are lots of things that are dramatic that begin to change, even in our own backyard, when we follow a procedure of, I'll say, less harsh treatment of soils and harsh treatment of chemicals around the in your environment.
Yeah, and I got a bone to pick with a couple of squirrels and chipmunks that like pooped all over my broccoli last year. Mike grew me the biggest, most delicious looking broccolis, and they just came in and they took one bite and hopped to the next one, and there was just crazy. But okay, I'm glad they have a place in our ecosystem. I won't pick on them so bad. I got to figure out a way to cover my broccolis as well.
Yes.
Before we get to the root of things, we're going to thank our sponsors and affiliate links. The Organic Gardener Podcast is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, gardeners, healthy eaters, strength trainers, and green future growers just like you get lower rates on their life insurance. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/OGP. Or mention the promo code OGP when you talk to a Health IQ agent to save up to 33% on your life insurance. Of the 2018 Spring Garden Journal. It's now live on Amazon for only $8.95. Since I took out January and February, it really dropped the price. It's a great place to record your garden journey, keep all your data in one place. You're going to want to remember frost dates, planting dates, seed varieties, harvest dates. And just so many of my guests have said that keeping good records have helped them be the most productive gardeners they can be. Mike and I created this journal to keep track of what you're growing, what you're eating, what you're harvesting, and just all those things together. So get your 2018 Spring Garden Journal today. So let's get to the kind of what I call getting to the root of things and ask about, well, like I kind of skipped over. Do you want to tell us about something that grew really well this year? Just kind of quickly.
Well, probably our record one is that most of, we do a nice job. And again, we'll go back to the Olympic crop of tomatoes. We do particularly well with tomatoes. Our plants, most of our plants, some of the heritages don't, but most of our plants will grow out of 8-foot high cages and drape out. We'll produce tomatoes almost every year right up to frost. I mean, right through frost. I mean, because they'll basically die in the frost with the green tomatoes, what we don't pick off. So tomatoes have done extremely well. We've actually had a phenomenal pumpkin year this year. Last year, that was partly timing, partly the weather, and partly I think the soils. So I think you have a chance to have a very in these systems. A lot of things will do very, very well depending on
what
you want to manage.
It's interesting. At our fair, what they really judge, what Mike has won the most awards for, is like they're really into produce that's the same size. Like if he can come in with 5 tomatoes that are still attached to the stem, that seems to be their mm-hmm. rule of thumb. I like your that it should really be about nutrition and more than that. But I always think that's interesting that they, how many potatoes, you know, can you have 5 potatoes that are all about the same, I forget what they call it, but like where they're all the same size.
Yeah, we certainly don't. I mean, we have variety. Certainly in our world, we also plant. Diversity is one of Mother Nature's, I think, not secrets, but one of her hallmarks of what you need to do. So we like to plant varieties of things. So we don't plant a tomato plant. We grow, if we have 12, we'll probably have 9 varieties. And because we like the variety of the different fruits, there's a certain amount, you know, they come in at different times. They, you know, have certainly different appearances. So for cooking and all of that, they're, and for, you know, dining, they're much more enjoyable in that regard. But we do the same with basil. We do the same with potatoes. We'll grow, it'll grow like 4 different kinds of potatoes just because of the variety they provide. And pumpkins, I think we did 6. So everything from pie-based pumpkins to what I'll call more jack-o'-lanterns, to white pumpkins, to blue pumpkins, to warty pumpkins, just because of the variety. And in our household, some of those extra ones end up in, you know, with the chickens and, you know, back to your not want, don't waste, don't want kind of a thing, you know, so we cycle as much of that as around as we possibly can. So yeah, that's what, yeah.
How about
I'm not as, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, how about something you're excited to do different next year or want to try new?
Well, see, now I'm not the garden guy anymore. See, I have stepped by. So my daughter has already, and I won't go into dollars, has already enjoyed a browsing and a purchasing on the seeds catalogs that have arrived. And I am certain we have a variety of different things to try. I know in one case, because we have 2 grandchildren, I think there's some Indian corn going to be growing. But I think there's a number of other things that she's looking at to try. So we try probably 3 or 4 new things, I would say, every year. Pickling cucumbers last year on a trellis system, and I think we're going to eat pickles for quite a while yet, which is all great. Nothing wrong with that. It's just that I'm not sure we'll grow as many pickles this year, so we'll probably grow something else. So I let her now do that. So I don't know what we're going to totally plant. So maybe that's fun for me too. So we'll get to see what she's chosen.
I think that's an awesome little golden seed you drop right there about, like, you had a lot of pickles this year, so maybe you might not grow as many this year. Like, I don't think anybody's kind of pointed that out, but that's true. Michael do that a lot of times, that if we still have something left over from the year before or we're running out of, he'll plant more of, or thinking about things like that. And, like, I made this garden journal where you can keep track of those kind of things for listeners. So how about something that didn't come out the way you wanted it to? And it could be about your business as well as, like, the garden, if you're not in the garden.
Well, let's stay with gardening, because I've tried to maintain a natural organic lawn for numbers of years, and I have not given up, but I have not mastered what I need to do totally in my lawn system. I have bursts of success followed by some stretches of not so good. And I don't know if it's all weather driven at times, because I don't irrigate. I guess I refuse to spend the money, and I think it's technically kind of the wrong way to go. Lawns are one of the most wasteful environmental attributes or things that we do in this country. Very, very high environmental impact and not much real return. So you kind of have to have one, or we certainly are in a position to have a nice one. So I continue to work to try to do that as organically and naturally as I can. And I will just say I've not mastered that yet in my mind. It looks nice at times, looks pretty good at times, and then other times it looks pretty rugged. So I don't know if it's weed management that I'm not as good at. I don't know that maybe I don't have all the calcium nutrition I need in the grass. So that's on the docket for this year, to try to take a hard look at that. And, but that's probably one that I have not. And I sell a lot of lawn fertilizers, and I help people do it. And some people have way more success doing it the way I say than I'm having success doing it that way. So maybe there's just something different that I haven't figured out. So yeah, that was one that didn't kind of go according to Hoyle.
So that's a good point that you bring up. Like, should people do a different soil test for their lawn than they do for their garden soil if they want to try to figure out what they can do about their lawn? Or
it's not normally. The systems, the good news is that most plants have a balance of what microbes and organisms they want to have associated with them, kind of who they want their friends to be. And the good news is we don't have to figure that out for them. They've done all that. What we need to do is provide an environment where they have the chance to thrive so that the plant can assimilate them or connect with them. Grasses are clearly different than what you typically grow in the garden. But it's not clear to me that you have to feed them dramatically differently. Different things will propagate because the grasses or the tomato plants will eventually balance that out. But generally, if you provide solid, good nutrition, it will work. We have a product that we've had for years in the line. It's the numbers are, and we call it Luscious Lawn and Garden, but it's a 315, which is not overly dramatic in the numbers, but that has done a phenomenal job in producing incredible peppers and tomatoes, and it does a very excellent job in lawns. So it we know there are products that can go across, and good nutritious soil plants will thrive in. I think in my case, I may be short some nutrients in the soil. I'm not even sure some of my lawn soil would be as good as my garden soil. That's probably because I've put more compost and done more things. And the other thing is you can till a garden, you work the soil a little bit, mix things in. You can't do that in a lawn, so you're depending on things working their way down into the soil.
Hey, Progressive Radio Network listeners. I am so touched that you could join us today. But we've run out of time. So if you'd like to hear the complete episode, just go to the organicgardenerpodcast.com and you can listen right there on your desktop, on your phone. You could certainly go to iTunes or your favorite podcast app and subscribe to the Organic Gardener Podcast or download the episode there. If you have any questions about how to do it, just, you know, email me at organicgardenerpodcast.com or orgpodcast.com. Hit me up on Facebook. I've been getting lots of Facebook friends and people joining the Facebook group from Progressive Radio Network. And so I'm just touched that you've joined us. And I hope that, you know, if there's anything we can do for you, let us know. But I hope you've enjoyed this episode. And if you want to hear the full version, the rest of the show or the beginning of the show, whatever part's missing, like I said, just go to organicgardenerpodcast.com and click on the podcast tab. Thanks. Did you get your copy of the 2018 Spring Garden Journal? It's now live on Amazon for only $8.95. Since I took out January and February, it really dropped the price. It's a great place to record your garden journey, keep all your data in one place. You're going to want to remember frost dates, planting dates, seed varieties, harvest dates. And just so many of my guests have said that keeping good records have helped them be the most productive gardeners they can be. Mike and I created this journal to keep track of what you're growing, what you're eating, what you're harvesting, and just all those things together. So get your 2018 Spring Garden Journal today. If you know somebody who would benefit from the Organic Gardener podcast, we would just love it if you would share it with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.